Hello, this is your host, Mike Petrilli of the Thomas B. Fordham Institute, here at the Education Gadfly Show and online at edexcellence.net. Now, join me in welcoming my co-host, a man who's been twisting arms all over the country to try to get rid of state charter school caps, Rick Hess!
Hey, Mike, how you doing, babe?
Wait a minute, that's not you, that's Arnie Duncan!
Oof, he is throwing his title around, isn't he?
He is. Understood that in Tennessee, which just passed a very good update to its charter school law, that victory was largely because Arnie Duncan was calling up state legislators and twisting their arm.
Well, you know, and apparently Lamar Alexander was too.
Right.
There's two things going on here that just worth touching on. One is, I agree with Duncan on this, so I think that's a good thing. On the other hand, I disagreed with him earlier when he arm twisted on Samford, remember? We were going to force South Carolina to find a way to take this stimulus money, whether the governor wants it or not.
And the governor's so upset about this, he absconded to Argentina.
or West Virginia. or the other trails. Something. But the larger point here is, even those of us who happen to agree with the administration on this or that particular arm twisting exercise, you know, it bothers the heck out of me. I'm not sure that I'm real comfortable with the role that members of the cabinet are going to be routinely getting in the business of trying to dictate to governors and state legislators what their policy should look like. If they're, you know, if a future secretary is advocating for things that you or I don't like, I'm really not crazy about the notion that, you know, legislators are simply there to be subjects of, you know, arm twisting and pushing from D.C.
Of course, there is precedent for this. The Bush team was certainly arm twisting folks in Utah when they were threatening.
And you, if I recall, and you know, to our credit, you and I blasted that pretty hard, both the Utah and the Connecticut arm twisting by the Bushies as inappropriate and overstepping of bounds.
At least I did that once I was no longer a Bushie. okay. Hey, I hope our listeners are noticing something. We jumped right into substance right away this week. So we're going to play Pardon the Gadfly. We're going to hear Amber with her research minute, and then we're going to rate that reform. Sound good?
That sounds like a lot of stuff, but
well, then let's get started. Christina's back from China. Christina, let's play Pardon the Gadfly.
Do you have any food while you're there, Christine?
No.
No food?
No food. Rice. Rice only.
Rice, that's not food?
Topic number one.
They call it Chinese food.
Yeah, you had to go for the stupid Chinese food joke.
I like it.
You guys ready? Philadelphia teachers report being under intense pressure to pass students, even those who barely show up to class, let alone do their work. The practice of social promotion is nothing new, but Philly's version has a new twist. Passing rates are one of the contributing metrics on school report cards. Should we find this troubling?
Oh, this can only end well.
Please do explain, Rick.
Gee, let's see. We are going to start evaluating schools based on whether or not they pass their kids through to the next grade. Huh. It takes a real genius to figure out where that's going to take you.
Yeah. You know, supposedly teachers said they were getting calls from principals saying, you know, are you sure that kid got a 58? Don't you think maybe they got a 65? Now, this sort of thing has probably been going on in lots of places for a long time. There's always been pressure to just move kids on. It's less trouble for the schools. They feel like, you know, get them on, get them out. Who cares?
But especially if you're going to build formal metrics around this and you're going to, you know, actually evaluate schools on these criteria, you create whole new sets of incentives for folks to fudge the heck out of these stats.
Yeah, this is why in high school context, I think we need good end of course exams helps on this front, right? Mm-hmm. Either at the state level or the district level, say, hey, at the end of the day, we want to know if kids have learned the material. The only problem with that at the high school level is that there's probably a lot of kids who could pass those tests on day one. And then the question is, what should we do with the kids in the meantime?
And well, currently we have a solution, which is stick them in AP classes, where we hope that they actually learn something, but focus on trying to get as many warm bodies in as possible. This is going really well. I feel good about things.
Okay, good.
Topic two, the broader Boulder folks have a new report out today on school accountability. What do we think?
So, Rick, here's the big news. I think it's eminently sensible.
Whoa.
It's, you know, when the broader Boulder group came out with this manifesto, was that like a year ago? I think it was. I thought refighting this old battle about whether or not poor kids can learn and, you know, it's not fair to hold schools accountable because schools alone can't close the achievement gap. But there wasn't a lot of that kind of language in this little brief. What they said was basically we should expand NAEP to test more subjects and more often and at the state level so we have a better picture of, you know, subjects like history and science, make sure they're not getting squeezed out. And at the state level, supplement state you know, kind of test-based accountability systems with school inspectors to make sure that schools are, you know, if they're improving test scores, is the right way, not by test prep, but by having good practice.
And they even talked about the utility of value-added metrics in this context.
Well, definitely. Now, that's where some of the reformers will complain, because they definitely say, look, we think the idea of proficiency is harmful. You're trying to get kids to a certain point on the scale means you're going to ignore kids way above or below that. You know, some reformers will say, well, see, they're going to say that as long as a kid makes a year's worth of progress, it's fine, even if they're way, way, way behind.
But this is actually, you know, one, this is a reason why we don't want to use NAEP as an accountability system.
And they said that. That's right.
You know, NAEP as a backdrop is incredibly useful because we're getting measurements, one, more broadly, according to this kind of rubric, and two, we actually do want to know, for an x-ray purposes, what states look like in terms of proficiency, but we would also like to have an independent assessment of value added in these states. This is good stuff. On the inspectorate, it's a sensible idea. Question, of course, it depends entirely how you do it. This stuff can turn into a whole bunch of petty bureaucrats running around and terrorizing schools, or it can be a really powerful engine for quality. Matters a lot how you talk about it. Okay. You know, what's funny is while Broader and Boulder is doing this, their counterpoint, the folks who you and I originally, I think, probably thought we'd be closer to, the Education Equality Campaign, or whatever the heck they're called nowadays, best I can tell, they've become a wholly owned subsidiary of, of charlatans, most famously our crazy race baiter buddy up in New York.
Who is our crazy? Oh, Mr. Sharpton.
Mr. Sharpton. I did not mean Mr. Klein. Okay. What were you thinking?
I just want to be clear. Mr. Sharpton. Okay.
Apparently, they are now, the best I could tell, running around subsidizing rallies for him to go off and spew crazy things.
Yeah. And one more point. You know, this Broader Boulder thing, one thing they say is, hey, the federal government shouldn't try to get all the specifics, you know, down pat. They should give some state flexibility. Again, sounds sensible. I don't know. Am I changing or are they? That's the big question.
Ooh.
Christina, topic number three.
The Department of Education is removing the notorious No Child Left Behind Little Red Schoolhouse from outside the doors of 400 Maryland Avenue.
Thank God.
What?
Oh,
some
my God.
Cite this move as a symbolic rebranding of the department. Others find it silly. Should we mourn the passing of this Bush-era structure?
This is a travesty, and I want to tell you why. It costs the taxpayers $26,000, $26,843 to put those things up. And which I know because it became a big deal at the time. The Democrats in Congress said, oh, you can afford to build these little red schoolhouses, but you can't afford to fund school construction. So the taxpayers paid for these things, and I understand they are just dismantling them willy-nilly. They could have put these up on eBay. Thank you. Gotten some money for it. I think there's a lot of people who would have wanted one of these schoolhouses.
I think Spellings would have wanted one in her backyard.
Yes, exactly. We could have put one here at the entrance to the Fordham office, perhaps.
This is symbolic of the Bush administration just waving around this ludicrous credit card and dismantling any conservative credibility on spending. The notion that we are going to improve schooling in this country by asking bureaucrats to walk in and out of giant tinker toy plastic buildings, and that this was somehow a good expenditure of more than $20,000 in taxpayers, it was just the nutsiest, most insulting, painful thing.
I don't think that's fair. Well, I wanted one of those schoolhouses, and I'm angry that they just gave them away, dismantled them.
Did they? So where are they?
I don't know. Can you go salvage them? They're landfill? I mean, this can't be good for the environment. I think the environmentalists should be up in arms about this. All right, that is all the time we have for Barton the Gadfly. Now it's time for everyone's favorite. And I have to say, I think if we look at our statistics from last week, once we announced that Amber's Research Minute was not part of the show, people just fled in groves. It was pretty depressing. So welcome her back to the show, Amber's Research Minute.
So low, I can't hardly hear.
You know, Amber, we've been inspired by your Research Minute now. We're starting a new video blog series on our blog, Flypaper, where we try to say something interesting in
1 minute.
Mm-hmm. That's right. It's pretty hard, I have to say.
You did a nice job yesterday.
Oh, thanks.
What did you say?
You'll have to watch it.
Gotta watch it.
What did he say? I don't do blogs.
I talk turnarounds.
Much like video blogs.
He's very enthusiastic.
You are now a blogger.
You were enthusiastic about turnarounds?
Well, enthusiastic about talking about turnarounds.
Thank you. I was enthusiastic about pointing out the reasons why Arne Duncan's turnaround strategy is not going to work.
Right. Oh. There you go.
Yeah. Well, that probably... Okay.
Thank you. We need insightful comment.
We need your approval.
Okay, Amber, what are we tackling this week?
This week, we've got a well-publicized study that asks the ever-important question, how does the performance of students in charter schools and in traditional schools stack up?
Credo
conducted a longitudinal analysis of roughly 2,400 charter schools operating in 16 states, which comprise roughly 70% of the U.S. charter school population. Findings, on average, 46% of charter schools have math gains that mirror the gains of match traditional public schools. 17% of charter schools perform higher in math. 37% of charter schools perform lower in math. Oops. In reading, charter schools do a bit worse, but it's small, so it's really not meaningful. Notably, low-income students and English language learners fare better in charter schools than in traditional schools. Clearly, not good news that over a third of charters do worse than traditional schools in preparing kids for math. But, and this is important, the negative findings are largely because a critical mass of charter school students in the study are brand new to the school. Past research and common sense tells us that kids in their first year at a new school don't initially perform well, but they do gain steam later. Credo's disaggregated results confirm this. Finally, I'm almost done. The analytic write-up, kind of sloppy. We don't have sample sizes for schools, or in students are not provided either. They say up front that Massachusetts is included in the study, but there are no results for it. That said, the report is an important contribution, and its final recommendation is particularly on target, which is the charter school movement must remove barriers to entry as well as to exit. Was that like 2 minutes?
Oh, you know, I wasn't even checking. Sorry. I was so riveted by it.
It was pretty tight. You deliver these things tight, Winkler.
There was a lot in that report. It was meaty, and I was trying to hit the highlights. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. No, you did that very well. I like that. So let's talk a little bit about methodology. My favorite topic, always. Mm-hmm. I'm just kidding. But they do something where they found virtual twins for these charter schools. Was this a legitimate approach?
I thought it was legitimate. So basically what they do is they match the charter school kid up with a kid who was in his previous school, the feeder school is what mm-hmm. they call it, matched on a bunch of critical variables, including prior achievement. I think it's pretty good outside of a random assignment. I didn't have any problems with this.
So if Rick and I went to the same school, and then I chose a charter school, and he stayed behind, mm-hmm. and then they looked and they said, Rick and Mike look pretty similar. He could be my virtual twin.
He could be your virtual twin.
Hey, I like that.
We should get bracelets.
Yeah.
Virtual twin bracelets.
Nice. Yeah, you think y'all would have scored same on a previous achievement test?
I think with intensive studying, I could catch him.
Yeah, baby.
Now, you know, another concern that's been raised, certainly by the National Alliance, is mm-hmm. that students in charter schools, the test results were for their first year in the charter school, not mm-hmm. prior to their entry in the charter school.
Yeah, and you know what? I would have loved to have been able to find that in the report. I got to tell you, the analytic write-up was sloppy. I didn't have problems with the findings, but frankly, I couldn't even find like the years where the data were gathered.
No kidding.
I couldn't find, you have to look in the appendix and you see T minus one, which kind of clues you, okay, it's 2 years, you know? So I'm just saying, if that's there, it wasn't easy to find if that's the case, but I have no doubt that's the case.
I mean, that's a real...
I mean, no sample sizes for the school or the state-level analyses.
That's really surprising in a study that's gotten this kind of attention.
I agree. I mean, it's a credible research outfit, you know, so you're kind of wondering what's going on
especially,
here.
Especially, I mean, they had to anticipate. In fact, we know they anticipated the kind of impact this might have. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so it is peculiar that they wouldn't have taken real care to kind of dot all the I's and cross all the T's.
And the Massachusetts thing is really weird. Like, I mean, I asked a couple other people about this because I wasn't sure whether, you know, maybe I was missing something, but it's a mystery what happened to Massachusetts, frankly.
Well, I have a theory. Folks figured out they need to rush the study out before the National Charter School Conference. And you know what? That strategy worked in terms of press.
Mm. Interesting.
And they even got a mention from Arne Duncan from the podium. So,
The song. Since kids are new kids to a school, they always struggle. We know they always struggle.
New kids on the block?
So,
yeah!
No, we have Try Again by Aaliyah, who apparently, I'm told, died in a plane crash. But anyway.
Way to be culturally relevant.
Remember this song? This was cool. This was like a number one hit back in the day, I think.
She died in a plane crash?
Yeah.
That's really sad.
They made a TV movie about her, didn't they?
No, that was Serena.
They made movies about more than one.
Thank you, Amber, for her research minute. Now it is time for us to rate that reform! Okay, Stafford, fire it up.
Okay.
I mean, you know, Stafford, by the way, Amber, you should know, she tried to have a whole coup last week. She was going to like come, you know, full guns blazing and try to take over the research minute spot. But I have to tell you, just like in New York State's legislature, it was a failed coup, Stafford. So it was
which side is doing the coup in the Senate?
Well, remember the Republicans tried to switch.
Or is it the Dems who are because the Dems have swapped them back? So now they're having dueling.
Yes, they each have gavels.
Yeah. Yes.
Anyways, but just like Amber still has her research minute, and Stafford has a Rate That Reform. So Stafford, let's rate that reform this week. What are we talking about?
All right. So we're talking about a ninth grade, third period algebra class at Clayton Valley High School outside San Francisco. This class, to put it nicely, is a mess. On a typical day, students are lighting the trash can on fire, smoking cigarettes, smoking pot, blowing up Play-Doh in the microwave, throwing spitballs, and flicking the lights on and off. So what about learning math, you ask? And where was the teacher? Well, he's actually there, usually sitting behind his desk and using his computer, seemingly oblivious to the madness ensuing around him. Parents have complained repeatedly, and though the school sent a vice principal to observe the class, the teacher, Michael Huang, was not removed from the classroom. So fed up, one female student decided to videotape the shenanigans on her cell phone one early day in May. And not wasting the opportunity, the video was sent to the district superintendent in the hopes that finally something would be done. And something was done. The students involved in the paper fight, which was what she was videoing, were suspended, and a teacher's aide was assigned to Huang's class to keep order. But the budding videographer was also suspended for filming the class without getting the teacher's permission, which the district alleges is a violation of the state education code and of the privacy of everyone on the tape. So I gave problem definition here a D, because though I have the utmost respect for privacy laws, that's clearly not the issue here. The issue is that the teacher shouldn't have been in the classroom, the student shouldn't have been running around causing a ruckus, and if the claims of drug use are true, breaking the law, and the school should have intervened months and months before the student took the matters into her own hands. I will admit that she did violate the education code, though as her mother pointed out in a letter to the district, of course she couldn't get the teacher's permission since she was blowing the whistle on the teacher. But that's peanuts compared to what was going on in this classroom. Honestly, it simply sounds like the district was embarrassed, or at least it should have been, and was taking it out on the whistleblower. As for execution, my response was a bit more positive, so I gave this a C-. The district gets points for finally suspending the students who are acting up in this class, and for putting a teacher's aide in the classroom, though I wonder why they didn't just remove the teacher altogether, seeing as he is only in his second year and presumably not tenured. But the district clearly loses points for suspending the videographer. They should have given her a slap on the wrist for making the tape and then congratulated her for shedding light on this ridiculous situation.
I like this.
Pink slips all around, baby.
Pink slips all around. You know, go ahead.
Oh, this just reminds me. When Howard Fuller was new as superintendent, you remember this? This was like in 92. Somebody had filmed the stuff going on in schools. One, they were shooting dice in one classroom, and there were three instances like this. Howard was ambushed on a Milwaukee area public TV show or some TV show. He said, "That's it. We're going to fire these guys." Couldn't fire him. Mm-hmm. Wound up having his hands tied. This is just nuts. And the fact that the superintendent wasn't abashed or embarrassed and didn't pull the plug on that teacher the next day, what the heck?
So mark my words, within 10 years from now, there will be a video camera in every classroom in America. It's going to happen. I'm just saying, look, I mean, privacy, it's hard to say. We're used to walking in through cities having cameras all around us. I mean, these lines are going to be blurred. And we're going to look back on this incident and say, wow, how anachronistic it was. Okay, well, thank you for that. Rate That Reform. That's all the time we got for this week. Thank goodness.
Oof.
Rick? Till next week.
I'm going to still be Rick S.
I'm Mike Petrilli of the Thomas B. Fordham Institute's Education Gadfly Show, coming to you at edexcellence.net. Signing off.